Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So it's been 15 years since an intertribal slaughter in Rwanda killed an estimated 800,000 Tutsis and politically moderate Hutu. Rwanda has come around from that reputation of slaughter and genocide and has created a place of tourist hotels, gourmet cafes, Wi-Fi, and shopping malls, in addition to acquiring a measure of credibility as a diplomatic mediator in the region as well. Joining us in the studio is Jeff Chu, a senior editor with Fast Company magazine. And in the current issue, he has a story called Rwanda Rising. It explores Rwandan President Paul Kagame's aggressive attempts to court Western investors and to directly sort of nation to nation turn Rwanda from an impoverished nation to a powerful, popular brand and a locus of investment from around the world. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
What is the model here for Rwanda? Is it Vietnam or you know, other economic tigers that have emerged from the developing world and unlikely to a certain extent?
President Kagame likes to talk about Singapore. I don't know that there's really a great model out there. This is something that really hasn't been tried before. Other countries haven't been as poor as Rwanda, and nobody has this tragic story, and nobody's tried to do it so quickly either.
So what are the limitations then on the surface for Rwanda, and how has President Kagame attempted to get around them?
You know, it's a tiny country. It's the size of Vermont, but it's got tons and tons more people. It's landlocked. It doesn't have access to ports. Kagame has tried to take care of this problem by reaching out to investors in the U.S. He spends a lot more time in Boston and Austin and Seattle courting CEOs than he does begging for aid like most African leaders do.
Well, and you get the sense that the things are actually happening. Here is Dr. Eliane Ubujaru, who she's a professor at McGill University and an advisor to President Kagame, and talks somewhat predictably about what's going on in the country.
I come to Rwanda probably about four times a year, and every time I come, I notice something new. I notice better service at the airport. I notice new buildings going up. I notice new businesses coming. I notice new programs within the countryside that are looking at ways to bring value to agriculture and get more money coming to farmers.
Now, was that your impression, Jeff, when you were in Rwanda for the period for this article?
Definitely in the city. I like to say that Kigali is Africa that Americans can handle. You have the Wi-Fi, as you said. There's a 24-hour supermarket. The streets are clean. It's well landscaped. But if you go outside of the city, it's more like Africa that you would expect from the pages of National Geographic. You see the babies with the distended tummies. You see the malarial mothers. You see a lot of the poverty, and that's the big problem for Rwanda.
So what is Kagame offering investors? Natural resources? Probably not. Rwandan manufacturing markets at a lower wage scale than, say, China? I wonder.
I would say he's offering a lot of hope right now. They have coffee. They have pretty good coffee that they sell in Starbucks and in Costco, and that's brought a lot of foreign income into the country. They don't have any resources to speak of, but what he's trying to do is to develop a high-tech hub. He's working on education. They've got internet access. It's going reasonably well.
Well, listen to Alex Kanyakole, who's the head of the Rwanda Coffee Development Authority in Kigali. He sort of lays out what the challenge is right here.
We need it to be sold as a brand, not as a commodity coming from anywhere or which can come from anywhere. Because this is what really gives us a competitive and a distinctive advantage in the market.
So how do you rebrand Rwanda, in the case of what this source is talking about, coffee, as something separate from all the instability that Rwanda has come to represent?
To be frank, I think it's going to take a lot of time. I think one reason that the brand of Rwanda appeals is that we like a winner. We like a comeback story, and that's what Rwanda is right now. It's an amazing comeback story over the last 15 years, and it's kind of banking on that. Over time, they're hoping the memories will fade and will develop a new image of Rwanda as a place where premium coffee comes from and where other good things come from. And that's what they're hoping for.
What investment is required to make good on some of these promises from the outside?
It's going to take tons and tons of investment from companies all over the world. I know that there's one German company that's raising a venture capital fund to invest in Rwanda. It's going to take that. They don't need our pity. They need our business. I think that's what's going to create jobs, and that's what's going to create a prosperous Rwanda.
But what you're describing is essentially a charitable venture when you're not really talking about markets in the sort of Vietnam model, the East Asian model. You're really talking about investing there because it's a good comeback story. That feels a little charitable to
me. I would disagree with that. You know, Costco went there to buy coffee because they had a good product to buy at a good price. It's been profitable for Rwanda, but it's also been very profitable for Costco. The CEO of Costco told me they would never have gone in there if it didn't make them a lot of money.
Now, does Costco sell Rwandan coffee as Rwandan coffee, or do they sell it as Costco Kirkland brand?
It's Kirkland Signature Rwandan Roast.
Really? That's interesting. Did they have to negotiate to get that language?
I think it's something that they chose to do because they knew that there was an appeal in the marketplace for the Rwandan brand. People know it, and again, they like to be part of a comeback story.
So beyond coffee, is there the tendency, the potential that, I mean, Rwanda borders Congo, and of course, the Democratic Republic of Congo, it has a serious problem with coltan, the natural resource that's used to create and manufacture cell phones. It's a conflict substance, a conflict resource. Is there any of the potential for that kind of problem inside Rwanda?
You know, Rwanda has a neighborhood problem. I like to think of it as a nice house in a bad neighborhood. And it's going to have to deal with some of those Congo issues. But on the whole, it's corruption-free, it's safe, and it's stable.
So is Rwanda a model for other sub-Saharan African nations or even African nations broadly as a whole?
That's what they're hoping to be. They're hoping to set a new model that doesn't depend on aid, that depends on trade and manufacturing and other forms of new industry. We'll see if they can make it happen.
Does President Kagame actually oppose the kinds of traditional aid that has come to places like Rwanda?
He's been one of the most outspoken African leaders on this. Last year at the genocide commemorations, he chided his countrymen, saying, "You should be ashamed that taxpayers in foreign countries are helping to pay for this country."
Now, does statements like that, as particularly if they're widely reported around the world, does that encourage investment?
Oh, for sure. It sets Rwanda apart from other African countries. It really changes the image of the country, and it makes it look like it's being proactive, it's thinking along new lines, and I think that really helps Rwanda.
So how unusual is it that the nation of Rwanda would be in a magazine called Fast Company?
I think one of the great things about it is that it is counterintuitive. You don't expect to have a happy story coming out of Africa, especially from a country that 15 years ago was such a basket case where so many people died.
Well, it is a great positive story and a lot of interesting sort of economic indicators that are counterintuitive to this recession, which we're told again and again has so many dire consequences for the developing world. Jeff Chu, senior editor at Fast Company magazine, thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot.